Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
you know we did.
We started to burn too many things we found. Too much coal, too much oil, too much nuke, too much gas. And we also have lost too much. One of our great brothers, a great warrior, a wonderful, wonderful human being, Michael Marriott, has passed away from NIRS, Nuclear Information Resource Service. He was just a fantastic, amazingly powerful and wonderful individual made a tremendous impact on this Earth. We miss him dearly, and I'm going to devote this hour, today's show, the Solartopia show, to our brother Michael, who certainly did as much as anybody to get us to Solartopia. And just an inestimable asset, a wonderful guy. And so today, the way I've structured it, we have three great people to start: Mary Olson from NIRS, Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear, and Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear. And we're going to start with Mary, and Mary will talk to us a bit about Michael, and then will leave us, and then Paul will talk to us a bit and leave us, and then Kevin, you'll stay with us. You've got a phone. You're at the memorial gathering for Michael. And tell us a bit about your feelings about Michael. And then if you can, pass around the phone to other people there. We'll also leave the other two lines open for people to call in at 888-874-4888. I know Rochelle Becker wants to call in, and there'll be others to just give this hour to Michael and create a document for his kids and his grandkids. He will be totally sorely missed. So Mary Olson of NIRS, do you want to start in and talk to us about our brother Michael? And we also want to work in, of course, where we're at currently with the nuclear industry and shutting it down. We have had tentative announcement, it seems, of the of a shutdown impending of the Calhoun reactor in Nebraska, and others are really on the brink now. We'll devote every shutdown for the next year or two to Michael. But Mary, you want to jump in and give us a... This is not meant to be somber, by the way. Michael was one hell of a happy guy and just really full of life and joy and with power and wisdom. Mary, you with us?
I'm here, Harvey. I'm more than thrilled that you are giving this time as a tribute to Michael. I met him when he was already the executive director of NIRS, which happened within 1 year of his joining that organization, the same one I still work for, Nuclear Information and Resource Service, in the mid-1980s. And I know your own commitment to the anti-nuclear battle, Harvey, goes back into the 70s, and there was such work done then that many people wanted there to be a national office for the movement in Washington, D.C. And my biggest tribute to Michael is that he knew how to keep us national. He knew how to keep the bigger picture. He knew how to think in terms of what we collectively, all of us as a community, could accomplish and where the win could come. And if you look back over these past decades that Michael had that role, there's win after win, and they depend on everybody, the hundreds and thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of people involved. But without Michael being the compass to figure out which point to mobilize all that pressure onto, those wins, many of them, would not have happened. And I think I just want to really take a moment to acknowledge the fact that he could see so well.
Well, he really had a great vision. I can't resist. I know it's a little presumptuous of me using my guest slot, but I want to make sure I get this story in, and I'm sure it'll bring a smile to you guys.
Go for it.
When I first met Michael, I must have been in the late 80s. I was called to Washington to work for Greenpeace in 1990. And as part of my initiation, Peter Bayhuth, the executive director, took me to a Grateful Dead concert. It was a really famous Grateful Dead concert. It was in RFK Stadium, which was totally packed. And it was pouring down rain. Now, I had only met Michael a couple of times. And I just, you know, it was kind of businesslike. And I had a sense of him as kind of a very serious and, I don't want to use the word geek, but really a studious indoor type of guy. And got to the Grateful Dead concert, and I'm standing there with Peter, and up comes Michael. He was in a tie-dye shirt, completely soaked, and his glasses were completely fogged up with water. You didn't seem to notice at all. He had this total LSD smile on his face. I said, oh, okay, well, there's Michael. He was just completely stoned out, you know, musician, a brilliant guy who had also the ability to be completely focused on the issue. I mean, that was what the genius of Mike Marriott. He was just such a broad and evolved human being, don't you think, Mary?
Yes, absolutely. And you have to know that I was not only his coworker, colleague, etc. I was a fan because Michael was a punk rocker. He was a drummer in a band called True Facts and the Insaniacs. They had some of the most incredibly intelligent lyrics in their punk rock songs because of Michael. And they still, to this day, very recently were performing together, you know, like 30 years later. And I just love that kind of commitment that he had for exposing the big nuclear lie, shutting down reactors, stopping new ones, and showing up to play his drums for True Facts and the Insaniacs. We're all on the same level, you know?
Yeah, it was like, you know, you'd sit there and you'd have these incredibly technical, high-level, sophisticated, and brilliant analyses from him on nukes. And then he'd turn around and say, well, excuse me, I got to go play drums with my punk rock band.
Yep.
That was Michael, man. He was also a really great father, and you know, loved his kids and was tremendously devoted. Just a total joy to work with, and as you say, Mary, you know, really had a great sense of how to win.
Yes,
and you know, a lot of reactors are shut in this. I think the highest thing you can say about any human being, you can say about Michael, which is that a lot of nuclear reactors are shut today, or didn't get built today because of him. So
both.
There you go.
He was there at every point along the way. And one little personal thing I want to stick in is that I worked with him for 25 years, and during that time, I reinvented myself a bunch of times because the demands in our fight changed, or the situation in my own life changed, or whatever. And Michael was always ready to say, as long as the plan was a good one, or help me make a better plan, yes, go for it. And what
Absolutely.
An amazing opportunity in my lifetime to have a job for as long as I've had it, but to have so many different phases of it, and him stay in and be very willing to say, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mary Olson, where are you, Mary? You're in North Carolina?
I'm in Asheville, and before Michael passed on Monday, my sweetheart and I had already purchased a vacation package, and so Michael's, some of his final thoughts were, don't have a funeral, go do something fun. So I feel that we will lift our dear hi to Michael several times as we go to Disney World for a few days.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mary Olson from NEARS. You know, and you too, of course, have been on the case, and there are reactors on this earth that are shut or shutting because
Harvey,
of you too.
I just want to pitch Green World because Michael was first and foremost a writer, and Green World is his blog, and it is amazing, and it will stay there at safeenergy.org. Plus, we will be adding a tribute page to Michael in the coming weeks, and if people have anything they want to add to that effort, can I give my email? They could send it to me.
Of course, absolutely.
Okay, Maryo, M-A-R-Y-O, at NIRS, N-I-R-S, .org. And I will be back soon from my vacation and helping to put together, compile that tribute to Michael, because he gave us all so very much.
Well, Mary, likewise from you, and I'm sure that he'll be with you on your vacation. So, and I assume his writings are archived at Green World. How do we get to Green World?
I just know that that was really his biggest commitment was writing. So I'm hoping that we will be preserving his writing in multiple dimensions over time and making sure it doesn't disappear in the pixel land.
All right. Well, you okay. Take care, Mary Olson. Thank you for calling and. We'll proceed, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Paul Gunter. Paul, are you with us?
Yes, I'm on.
Paul,
can you hear me?
Beyond Nuclear. So, Paul, you've known Michael for God knows how long, and you guys...
Well, I can tell you, Harvey, I first met Michael at a civil disobedience at Seabrook in 1989 when... same year you and I got arrested with, I think there were probably 900 people that were blocking
gathering.
The gates.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Marriott had was part of an affinity group that had come up from Washington, D.C. We knew them, of course, as NEARS already because we were all, already readers of Michael's. Are you still there?
Yeah, somebody's got a line off the hook there. If we can somehow deal with that, I don't know.
Okay. Is that mine?
Just go ahead and you can talk over it. We're used to it. Go ahead.
Okay. It's your line. So I'll just keep
it. It's my line? Okay. Go ahead and talk, Paul. I'm going to hang up and call in. Oh, there we go. Paul?
Hello. So anyways, Harvey.
Yeah. We're good.
I was Michael's nonviolence instructor for, everybody who did civil disobedience at Seabrook had to go through a nonviolence training and basically sign off on, a nonviolent good code of conduct as we carried out these high risk confrontations with police. And so you had to go through, we needed some assurance that you were going to be on your best civil disobedience behavior. And, I met Michael and we immediately hit it off. And, I would eventually go to work at NEARS, in August of, 1991. That was really an incredible opportunity. First of all, Michael basically provided me with my first venture into computers. I mean, I went from a teepee in New Hampshire to an office in Washington, D.C., and there are some stark differences. Our strategies, the whole idea of public education, it just took on a new mode that Michael introduced me into, the world of, email even. It was my first, email I guess was still pretty early in 1991, but it was another big transition part of my life. And I knew Michael was, a very accomplished journalist. We'd all been reading the Nuclear Monitor for years, And, you know, NIRS was actually founded just after Three Mile Island in 1979. So, you know, the Nuclear Monitor was, again, a national spotlight on emerging nuclear issues and the, you know, well, the decline of new orders and construction in the United States. I mean, they were, you know, Michael was the chief editor and by and large wrote that thing. And he had, even before NIRS, he was an editor at the Washington City paper. So he's a very accomplished writer, and editor, and, a very savvy public advocate, you know, very politically savvy of the Washington DC scene and Congress and, you know, was, had studied these congressional profiles and knew who his friends and his enemies and who were, who was still undecided. He knew those people at each critical, point during the passage of nuclear, bailouts and shellouts and sellouts. And so, I mean, he was able to, write that and on deadline. And so, I mean, I was always impressed by him. And, you know, still, he was, a really, family oriented, boss too. And, loved kids and, the garden and very, very relatable to, you know, a good sit down chat over beers. Those were very fruitful points of awareness on the nuclear issue and strategies on how to deal with it and how to oppose it. And, you know, it led to things like, the action camps. I had the opportunity to, you know, even with NIRS, we took on civil disobedience. In 1998, we had a demonstration. It was actually an action camp outside of Vermont Yankee. And, this was three days of camping, in, the Green Mountain State, next to a Fukushima-style reactor on the Connecticut River, and you know, plot how we were going to shut it down, and or how we were going to bring people's attention to the need to shut it down, even. And so we had, you know, NIRS was really instrumental in organizing an action camp that could provide people with a in-depth session from professionals, organizers on say how to, you know, do press conferences and how to get out media advisories and you know, so it was actually a citizens activist manual of sorts that people lived in from around New England and even farther would come. And it would end in an action. The last one that with Michael I had there at Vermont Yankee, we were arrested with Dave Dillinger at the in a citizen's arrest of Entergy, and we blocked up their gate with small coffins of children that will be sacrificed by the exposure, you know, over generations now to nuclear waste. Nobody can really say what that will cost or look like, but clearly those that are responsible for generating nuclear waste today without a watt of benefit tomorrow for generations, I mean, that's the price that Michael said we need to make people aware of what the real cost of nuclear electricity is.
Well, that, you know, Paul, you remind me, it's amazing. Okay, great. So we've got Alfred Meyer and Bob Backus on the line as well. Paul, I won't keep you much longer. I just, you know, these camps that Michael helped organize were incredible models that should be really used now for the Bernie Sanders people. And I wish you had Michael to walk into their office and tell them exactly how to do the kind of camps that were organized way back when, and we'll have to take up on that.
May have to pick up on them, even if it's Hillary or Donald.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Or even if it's Bernie in the White House.
Hillary is very pro-nuclear, as it turns out. Which you could spend. You're going to probably have to spend a show on to talk about. But thanks again, Harvey, for the opportunity to lend, my deep regard for his family. The legacy that Michael wants us to carry on.
Okay, Paul. Well, thank you so much. Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear. We have Alfred Meyer and Bob Backus waiting, but Kevin, I want to check in with you. Kevin, are you in the at the memorial gathering?
Yes, I'm in the Howard Zinn Room at Bus Boys and Poets in Hyattsville, Maryland, which is very close to where Michael's families have lived for decades. In Mount Rainier, and there's a good at least 50-plus people here already, a lot of folks from the anti-nuclear movement, but also members of his band, and his families are here, his friends from life, so I am here.
Well, wow. Well, why don't you say a couple words, then we'll have Alfred and Bob speak, and then we'll come back to you. You can pick up some people at the gathering. How's that sound?
Very good. I've talked to people who do want to jump on.
Kevin Cantor Beyond Nuclear, you're a very frequent guest on the show. Give us what Michael would be saying right now.
Well, what Michael means to me is pretty deep and life-changing. I met him in the mid-1990s before I eventually went to work for NIRS in 1999. And, you know, we were lucky enough in Southwest Michigan to host the first two of the nuclear-free Great Lakes action camps in 1998, 1999, and then I moved over to Chicago in 2001, and, learned a lot from Michael, got hired to do the Yucca Mountain and Mobile Chernobyl work when Mary Olson moved down to North Carolina, and so worked very closely with Michael through, you know, a very intense battle, and like Mary said, so many victories that we would not have won without Michael's brilliance and his strategy and his tactics, his ability to keep NIRS alive through thick and a lot of thin when we had little to no resources to work with. And, the anti-nuclear movement owes Michael Marriott a tremendous debt of gratitude. We would not be what we are today without him.
Well, he was a spectacular dude, no doubt about that. And I'm going to turn, Kevin, you'll stick with us. Yeah, and I know Tim Judson is at the gathering. Rochelle Becker is called in. So we're going to go with Alfred Meyer and then Bob Backus and then Rochelle, and then we'll come back to you. How's that sound?
I'll be here.
Okay. Alfred, you on?
Yes, I am, Harvey.
Okay.
I'm Alfred Meyer, and I work with Physicians for Social Responsibility. And on behalf of our organization, I want to extend our deepest condolences to Tanya and all of Michael's family, both his immediate family and his larger work family. I had the privilege of meeting Michael in 2002, and what I was struck by, while I certainly agree with everything that Mary, Paul, and Kevin have said so far, I just want to add that what struck me is that Michael dealt with these life-threatening topics with a ready smile and a real twinkle in his eye, that he was always ready, able, and willing to share his encyclopedic knowledge of nuclear issues and to help and encourage others to be engaged in these efforts. His presence will be greatly missed, but I want his family and others to know that he lives on in the hearts and minds of those of us who cherish our memories of Michael. Thanks very much, Harvey.
Well, thank you, Alvin. Thanks for the PSR, and I'm sure what you just said will bring a smile to his face. So thanks a lot, Alfred Meyer. Bob Backus, you with us?
I am. Thank you, Sluggo.
Okay,
I'm here
Bob.
At the legislative parking garage in Concord, New Hampshire. And I'm just delighted that you've done this, Harvey. This is a great thing to honor Michael. I certainly agree with what I've heard from Alfred and Kevin Camps. One thing I'd like to say about Michael, I don't think we've ever had a better writer to carry the message of the problems of nuclear power. His alerts, just his general writing skill was phenomenal. I mean, he was brilliant, and we're going to miss it. And the last thing I wanted to say is I think as a tribute to Michael, and he deserves our tribute, I would like to see the nuclear groups that have fissioned themselves, like NEARS from Beyond Nuclear, I'd like them to consider reuniting and uniting for a stronger force. I've always thought it was unfortunate we had these two groups that were in the same building with essentially the same mission with some differences. And, you know, I would hope that maybe it's time to consider a merger of these groups for, I think, greater strength. And I just think that would be a wonderful testimonial to Michael and his leadership. And he certainly did keep Beyond Nuclear going when, you know, by all reason it should have collapsed. And an incredible achievement. I'm going to miss him. I enjoyed being the chairman of the board of NEARS for the years I was. And I want to acknowledge the wonderful contribution Michael made, and best to his family. So thank you, Harvey, for doing this, and I'll look forward to hearing more.
Well, why don't we celebrate by shutting Seabrook? What do you think?
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. You know, we had 10 nuclear plants in New England. We're now down to 3 once Pilgrim closes. I mean, who would have thought? I remember the day when we were told, if you don't want nuclear, your choice is coal. Well, we got a lot of better choices now, don't we? We've got a lot to celebrate, but the fight's not over. We all know that. So I urge reconsideration of a merger between NEARS and Beyond Nuclear, and maybe some other groups too, to increase, I hope, our effectiveness in this this nightmare of a so-called peaceful atom once and for all.
All right, Bob Backus, a fantastic attorney on the case for God knows how long, Bob. In
long time, Harvey, long time.
Long time,
still
buddy.
Working on it here in the legislature.
Let me just run this by you, Bob, before you go. As a tribute to Michael, tell us how much nuclear waste has been generated by Seabrook Unit 2. Of course, the answer is zero. Okay. Thank you, Bob. Rochelle Becker, are you with us?
I am.
Rochelle, okay. So Bob was in New Hampshire. I presume you're somewhere in California?
I am.
Okay, so let's talk to Michael.
Okay, thanks. And thank you, Harvey, for this tribute. When we're in California, we're a long way away from all the people that Michael has united over the years, and it feels very good to be included in a tribute for a man who we all learn to love and certainly respect. And Michael was amazing in helping all of us out, all of us understand the issues, introducing us to so many people. I don't think there's a person I know in this movement who doesn't also know Michael. His influence is probably far beyond what he even knew. And I was fortunate to meet Tanya years ago when Michael invited me to go back to the Ukraine to get ready for the 20th Chernobyl anniversary, and a delightful woman. And I've only seen their children's pictures, but they're adorable. And I think Michael's strength was actually uniting us all, but actually pushing us all out of the nest to do whatever it was that could succeed in our different areas, and without interfering, but always being there if we needed him. So I love Michael. He's still in our hearts. He will unite us, and he will be part of the celebration of closing day. Although I'm sorry to cry because I'm supposed to be happy, but he was a very special person, and he will be missed.
He really was, and you are too, Rochelle. Tell us about your group a little bit and the Diablo fight. That's what he'd want you to do.
Our group is California-based, actually. We're not united, as Bob talked about, because we decided to give up on the NRC because we never thought they were going to do their job and find out what state agencies could do. And like Vermont and New England, we had 4 reactors. We have 1 left, and it won't be left for long. And we have a zillion projects that are about to begin. many oversight agencies in the legislature are looking at mitigation and what do we do now that when Diablo is closed. So we're close to closing Diablo, and we'll do it in Michael's honor. And if you need any information on what's going on in California, it's www.a4nr.org. Michael's always been in touch, could have always get people in touch with us, and we hope to stay close to NERS, Beyond Nuclear, and every other group, and celebrate each win.
Well, thank you, Rochelle Becker. You have been a tremendous activist here in California. I'm actually in L.A. right now, and it's just been a joy to work with you. I want to inform you and anyone else listening in Southern California especially, on May 29th, we're going to have a major election protection event based on the strip and flip selection of 2016 in Santa Monica. It's the Memorial Day Sunday at 3 p.m. And Rochelle, if you're in the area, anybody else, but especially working on Diablo, I do want to include a discussion of Diablo Canyon in this event. It's going to be with Greg Powers, Bob Petrakis, Mimi Kennedy, and me. We're going to go over, and I got a bit of disturbing news. I just learned that the exit polls for the California primary have been canceled. There will be no media exit polls, and you have to wonder about that. So, and that's something that Michael certainly would be involved with. So, Rochelle, if you're and anyone else working on the nuclear issue in Southern California has some time on Memorial Day Sunday, 3 p.m. Email me at solartopia@gmail.com, and I'll give you the address.
I'll do, and thanks again, Harvey, for doing this.
Well, thank you, Rochelle, it's always fantastic to be working with you.
You too. Take care.
Okay, take care. Okay, Kevin Camps, you back with us?
Hello.
Oh, yes, who's this?
It's Diane Nears, Nuclear Information and Resource Service.
Oh, Diane D'Arrigo, the great Diane. How are you, Diane? Are you at the
I'm great.
At the
I'm just in the bathroom, Michael.
You're in the ladies' room?
It's actually noisier than I thought. It's pretty noisy. Michael was a musician as well as an anti-activist. And so his party is loud and fun, and we're all happily remembering many years, 31 years of Michael. To just say that there'd be a lot of clear parts for Michael. He is stopping nukes, shutting down old nukes, preventing leaking dumps, and supporting movement around the world.
Well, thank you, Diane. And you, of course, have been specializing in nuclear waste all these years. You've done tremendous work, Diane D'Arrigo, still with NERS. And we appreciate your work as well. And I'm sure Michael will be glad to have you on the phone there. So you want to go out and join the party again and give the phone back to Kevin? That would be terrific.
We'll do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you,
Thanks
Diane.
Thanks for honoring
thank you, Diane
Michael.
D'Arrigo. Okay. So is there anyone else waiting on the phone here who wants to speak up before we go back to Kevin? Okay, so I do want to put in a couple things. As mentioned earlier, we are getting word that the CEO, I believe, of the utility that's involved with the Nebraska Fort Calhoun reactor, which has been flooded and a bunch of other stuff, has recommended it shut down. So we are poised, hopefully, to have another shutdown fairly soon. They are allegedly, hopefully not, but the owners of Pilgrim, south of Boston, have said that they want to have another fuel load at Pilgrim. We hope that we can stop that from happening. Of course, as Rochelle Becker has mentioned, we are closing in on Diablo Canyon. We've got major actions. Hopefully, major progress can be made at Indian Point, north of New York City, and a whole lot of other fronts going on. Kevin, are you back with us?
I am here.
Okay, Kevin. Were you able to dig up Tim Judson? Is he around?
Not yet, but I have one of Michael's old bandmates, so can he go next?
For sure, absolutely.
Hold on. Let me hand it over, and he'll introduce himself.
Okay. Hey there.
Hi, this is Tom Doyle. And,
Tom, okay.
I used to play in a jam group with Michael, and he was our drummer, and he drummed. The space we had, he drummed in a turret, and he was a very loud, very energetic drummer, and the turret, it was a brick floors, brick walls, and the drums would project out of there like thunder and bounce off the walls, and it was just a weekly joy to hear him go at it, and we would play very loud, and we have very understanding neighbors, fortunately, because I don't know how else we could have done it. But when I've written in the book for him most recently that I will think of him whenever there's a good-sized thunderstorm outside, because it was people could hear all up and down the street when we were going.
Cool.
And so that's,
did you ever call him?
What's
did you
that?
Ever call him Ginger?
I'm sorry, it's loud in here. What's that?
Did you ever call him Ginger?
Ginger, no, Ginger Baker, yeah. We did cream every now and then, actually. We used to do Sunshine of Our Love, and he would really do a nice duplicate of Ginger Baker with us.
Cool. Well, unfortunately, I never heard his band. I'm sorry, are you guys going to play at his memorial there?
There's going to be some playing going on, but I don't know that True Facts is performing in Toto. It looks like a couple acoustics are up there for the memorial, but it doesn't look like it'll be a whole True Facts thing going on.
Well, great. So how long did he play with your band?
Well, he played with our old jam group for, it's close to 10 years.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And he played while he was still struggling with pancreatic cancer, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He didn't play for too long after that. Unfortunately, even as he was struggling, then I had my own cancer experience with throat cancer, and so the band ceased. And then by the time I came back, he was drumming much less frequently.
Listen, it's great to hear from a member of his band. I really appreciate it. I don't know if you heard it at the top of the hour, but I really met him in a certain way at a Grateful Dead, the infamous 1990 Grateful Dead concert in RFK where it poured down rain. So, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, and I'll pass you on here.
Thanks.
Hello, Harvey. Coming back. Yeah, I did talk to Tim. You want to talk to Tim?
Yes, this is Tim Judson, who's taken over in the years from Michael. Thank you, Kevin. Tim,
you
with us?
Here's Tim. Hold on.
Okay.
Harvey?
Tim, how are you?
Well, I'm doing all right, Harvey, all things considered.
So you're at the Poets and Busboys, or Busboys and Poets, in Washington, D.C., for the memorial gathering for Michael, the party.
Terrific gathering of his friends and family and comrades.
Well, fantastic. So give us a few words about Michael, and then I want to have a basic discussion with you, as he would want, on the current state of fighting nuclear power. So tell us first about Michael, and then we'll talk a little nuke business.
Well, there's no way we're going to fill Michael Marriott's shoes. I mean, the man was likening him tonight to, the Che Guevara of the anti-nuclear movement. I mean, he was our leader and our organizer and our mobilizer for so long. There's not any way that we're going to be able to fill his shoes, but, he was very aware that, that the movement was going to go on after his passing. And, he was really focused on our being able to sort of build the next generation of the anti-nuclear movement. And that's really, the mission that's in front of us.
Well, he was such a great organizer, and he really had a lot of faith in you. I was very impressed when he brought you in, and I met you. I think you're certainly a worthy successor, and it's really great and gratifying to have you on the case.
Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence, but you know, Michael was never one to rest on his laurels, and you know, and I've been years isn't going to either. In fact, you know, it's sort of a sobering moment this afternoon. I'm coming here having left a nuclear summit held by the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Energy Institute, our, you know, public agency and the industry's lobbying organization, essentially, you know, crafting a whole agenda around how they're going to prop up nuclear power and keep it going, you know, into the 2030s and beyond. And, you know, this is something that, you know, Michael was very concerned about, and is we've, you know, been, you know, doing everything we can at NEARS the last 2 years to, you know, to be able to respond to and head off. But the, you know, the cacophony of industry speak and propaganda that was going on today being spouted by both elected representatives of the U.S. government, you know, industry executives and the Department of Energy today was striking. And I think that, you know, I think we need to, you know, take stock of you know, Michael's legacy and his successes in his career, and we need to, you know, to be taking the example and you know, and continuing the fight.
Well, that is quite amazing that the DOE would have a conference with a private lobbying group. I mean, come on. When are they going to have a conference with us?
What became very clear today, having listened to all of these presentations, and you know, both from the industry and from you know, government officials and everybody else, you know, is that the nuclear industry is basically on the verge of being on its deathbed, and the industry, you know, which includes the federal government, because you know, it's always been a federally sponsored industry. Is desperate to figure out how to keep this industry from dying. And, you know, and we have an opportunity to really put, you know, to put this thing to bed, and, you know, and to starve it of the billions of dollars in public support that it needs in order to stay viable. You know, but they're basically, you know, trying to leverage every relationship and every bit of influence they have right now to, you know, to ensuring that, that these, you know, aging, decrepit, dangerous, dirty old reactors that are running across the country continue operating and don't close.
It is quite astounding, I got to say. Now, Tim, I've read correct me if I'm wrong. Tell us the news about Fort Calhoun. because I've seen some stuff. Have you been following that?
Sorry, Harvey, I couldn't quite hear you, but I'm going to fan loud roof.
Fort Calhoun. Then, with the news about the Fort Calhoun reactor, what have you heard?
So are you asking about small modular reactors?
No. You got to get closer. Fort Calhoun in Nebraska.
Sure. Well, the Fort Calhoun reactor is another one of these, you know, what you could call a canary in the mine shaft. You know, Fort Calhoun was a reactor that should have been closed 5 years ago, at the very least. It was, you know, after in the wake of the Fukushima disaster, Fort Calhoun was in the summer of 2011, nearly flooded by, you know, by the Missouri River, and was offline for nearly 3 years. And the utility in Nebraska, you know, addicted to nuclear power as a lot of the reactor utilities are, decided ill-advisedly to spend hundreds of millions of dollars trying to, you know, in a desperate maneuver to try to keep that reactor from shutting down, and even brought in Exelon as a private nuclear operator to run that plant. And now, less than 3 years later, after bringing it back online, you know, they realize that they're basically $1 billion in the hole if they keep on running this reactor. And what's remarkable about it, and this is something that people ought to be really talking about, is that the utility decided to close Fort Calhoun because they have a commitment to 40% renewables by 2020, and, you know, then going on from there. and reducing carbon emissions, and that they weren't going to be able to do it by operating that nuke, that they were going to be able to do it by, you know, by investing in wind power and renewables and energy efficiency.
Well, that's a great thing, and it's happening all over. Thanks in part, of course, to your work, Tim. And I don't know if you heard earlier, Bob Backus had a lot of great things to say about both NEARS and Beyond Nuclear and all the other groups. So anything else you want to add in about Michael and where we stand with the nuke industry?
Well, I don't have anything more to add about Michael. I mean, you know, there's you know, on the one hand, way too much to say, and, you know, and other people should probably say it besides just me.
Good, good, good. So let me double check with you real quick. It looks like Fort Calhoun is on the brink of shutdown. We do have Pilgrim scheduled to shut down. They've said Exelon, or Entergy rather, has said they're going to do another fuel load. Hopefully we can stop that. The reactors in Illinois, they've gone in and they've, Entergy has told the legislature there that if they don't get a bailout, they're going to shut down. What do you think is going to happen now in Illinois with those reactors?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, as somebody who has spent the last several years fighting Entergy on several different fronts, both at Vermont Yankee, Indian Point, and Fitzpatrick, you know, as well as Pilgrim, you know, it's odd for me to say that that another nuclear corporation is less reality-based than Entergy is. But Exelon is certainly right there. And Exelon is essentially trying to save the nuclear industry all by itself, no matter what it takes, and have been essentially blocking renewable energy legislation in Illinois for 3 years. They're demanding nuclear bailouts in several different states. They seem to be, you know, wanting to hold the threat of nuclear plant closures over politicians' heads as a form of extortion in order to extract these political compromises from them. It's really remarkable what Exelon is doing. I think that sooner rather than later, the piper may need to be paid, and they may need to actually close one of these reactors in Illinois, if not more of them. But, you know, the mendacity of this corporation is really remarkable. And, I'm not sure how far they're willing to go, even myself.
All right, Tim Jensen, head of NEARS, thank you so much. Thanks for your kind words about Michael. We'll have a URL for this program tomorrow, and enjoy the memorial, as I'm sure he'd want you to do.
Yeah, well, thank you, Harvey, for doing the show and for letting more people in the world know about Michael Mario.
Okay, buddy, you take care. If you'll give us back to Kevin, that'd be great.
Thanks. We'll do.
Okay. All right, that was Tim Judson, who was chosen by Michael Mario as his successor.
Kevin,
Kevin? Yes, Kevin,
yeah.
How are you, buddy? What's
good.
Who's next?
Boy, would you like another anti-nuclear, or would you like a musical connection?
Let's do a nuker. We don't have that much time left, actually.
You want nuclear?
Yes, I do, actually. Let's stay
with
nukes.
Kevin
Camps here is
at
the Bus Boys and Poets in Washington, D.C. at the gathering to honor Michael Marriott. And hello, who we got here?
Hi, this is Allison Fisher with Public Citizen.
Oh, Allison, great, great. I'm so glad you're on. Public Citizen is a tremendous organization.
I'm trying to move to where it's not so loud, and I don't think that's going to be possible.
You're actually pretty good. Allison, you have a good, strong radio voice, so go ahead and talk. You sound good.
Yeah, so I'm Allison Fisher. I'm the Outreach Director with Public Citizen's Energy Program. I've been with the program for about, almost a decade. And when I came on, they brought me on as an organizer to fight, which at the time was the quote-unquote nuclear renaissance. And so there was a couple of reactor proposals near Washington, D.C., both in Maryland and in Virginia. And when I came on, I knew nothing about the issue. I was an organizer, and I was told, you'll learn the issue. And who they introduced me to learn the issue was basically Michael Marriott and Paul Gunter from from Beyond Nuclear and Michael from NEARS. And so for the last, 8 years, Michael served as a mentor to, a fresh out of grad school, Allison Fisher, who knew very little about the issue. And I got to learn it from one of the best, and not just somebody who was really knowledgeable and passionate, but somebody that was really even keeled and basically told me, this is one campaign, but it's part of a much bigger struggle, and it's a marathon, and you have to, you have to take care of yourself, and you can't get over, overwhelmed, you can't get overworked, and you can't get too angry. You just have to do the work. And at the, at the end of the day, the campaign that we worked on together in Maryland, Calvert Cliffs, we actually won, and that's one of the very few wins that I've had in my career to date. But it was, side by side with Michael Marriott, and I learned a lot, and I feel really, really blessed that I had that experience with him. A couple years ago, he asked me to be on their board, and so I've stayed really close to all the great work that NEARS and Michael have done.
Well, you mentioned Calvert Cliffs. I'm glad you did. Now, Michael really had a lot to do. There's a nuclear power plant that really went down in a large part because of Michael Marriott. I mean, he really focused on Calvert Cliffs. He was on that case, and by God, we won, didn't we?
Well, yeah, and it wasn't just opposition, right? So it wasn't just we were turning people out and, there were so many, all of this opposition in the state. As you know, Calvert Cliffs is already, there's reactors already there, right? And so they were very much embedded. Constellation had gotten into the community long before we even knew there was going to be a proposal. And so they had, paid off the right people or whatever. What Michael did is he came up with a strategy to oppose it on foreign ownership. And that's what won the day. That's what won the day. Like him knowing enough about the policy and knowing enough about, the law to know that we could challenge this reactor on the fact that it was, half going to be owned by basically the French government. And that we had a case to make. And that's eventually what won the day. And that was all Michael.
It really was.
Oh,
I was so impressed when he came up with that angle to fight Constellation and the whole financial shenanigan that they were trying to pull off at Calvert Cliffs. And he really, that was all Michael. And that was really an amazing victory at Calvert Cliffs. So, Allison, thank you. Allison Fisher from Public Citizen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for dedicating this time, and I have to tell you, I'm in the room here at his memorial, and there's all of these types of stories are being, passed around, and it's mostly smiling faces in here, just reflecting on his work and him as a person, and it's a nice celebration. It's a nice way to remember this really amazing person and an amazing colleague. An amazing leader in this movement. So thank you, Harvey, very much.
Well, thank you, Allison. We really appreciate it. It's been
an
honor
to
have you on, and I'll have you on separately another time. Kevin,
you
back with us?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, thank you so much. If you give us back to Kevin.
Hey, Harvey.
Hey, Kevin, I think we got time for like one more. We're running out. You got another group?
We have a little grouping of Louisiana Energy Services.
Okay, we got 5 minutes.
We got Diane Curran. We got Arton Makazani.
Oh, yeah, let me have Diane Curran and then Art.
Diane Curran.
Oh, God, I should get another hour for this. Let me talk to Diane Curran. Diane, how are you?
Hi. Doing all right.
So we have 5 minutes left.
This is a great gathering. What'd you say?
This is the great Diane Curran. Diane Curran has been one of the great attorneys.
You know what? That's what the thing about this whole thing is, if you want me to talk about something about Michael, the biggest case that I ever won was, we only won because of Michael. It was the LES case in Louisiana where they, this consortium was going to build a uranium enrichment plant in the middle of a very isolated, almost completely African-American rural community. And before the licensing process even started, Michael got legislation passed that would... Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. One thing I want to insert, because we're gonna run out of time soon. I want everybody, if someone could circulate, Kevin or you, a sign-up sheet with the email addresses, I will send everybody the URL for this show tomorrow. So
oh, okay.
if you or Kevin will conspire to get that done and email me the list, I will email this URL to everybody.
Think what can be done is there's a list of people that were invited to the party for Michael last November. So is that a good enough list?
Yeah, whatever you got. But just make that announcement if you would. Or people can email me. That's it. People can email me also at solartopia@gmail.com. And I will send everybody the link to this show. So go ahead, Diane. I think you're probably going to be our last. We'll probably hear the music coming over as you talk. But tell us the story.
Well, anyhow, Michael got legislation passed that was absolutely crucial to stopping this plant. And that was a requirement that instead of preparing a measly little environmental assessment, the government would have to prepare a full-fledged environmental impact statement for the proposed plant. And that was how it came to be that NRC and this Louisiana Enrichment Services Company were required to analyze the environmental impact of the plant in detail. And they did this really bogus environmental justice analysis where, they basically admitted that they picked the site that had the least economic value in terms of development for some other purpose like residential or recreational. They picked the community that was the most isolated, the most poor, and they put the plant there, and they essentially admitted it in deposition. So we were able to stop this plant. And it was really due to Michael. And then, of course, Michael went on to stop the Calvert Cliffs plant in Maryland. So,
that
and that
amazing.
Was all Michael's work. He wrote all the legal briefs, and I must say, Michael didn't need to bother with law school. He was an excellent lawyer, just learning the ropes on his own. I helped him a little bit, but really, he did all the work, and his work was brilliant. And we stopped. He stopped the Calvert Cliffs plant in rural Maryland.
That's amazing, you know. I mean, there's as I said earlier, there's nothing higher you can say about a human being than that they were instrumental in shutting down or stopping a nuclear power reactor.
Right.
There's not much greater service you can provide to humanity than doing that.
Yeah, and he was such a good strategist in so many ways. There's so many things that Michael did that had a big impact. He's left a big hole, really big hole. But he taught us all a lot, and we're going to carry on.
Well, thank you so much, Diane Curran. It's an honor to have you on the show, and I'm sure Michael will be thrilled.
It's an honor to talk to you, Harvey.
All right. Thank you, Diane. And we'll proceed if we can. This has been a full hour of tribute to Michael Marriott, who recently passed, the head of NERS for so many years, father of beautiful children. Kevin, hello. Oh, the music's coming on. Thank you so much, everybody, and we'll see you. Michael, we'll see you always on the Solartopia show. I can't even begin to sign off. Michael, we love you. Keep up, and no nukes, everybody.
We got what we needed when the sun shone.